Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 16, Praise of King Prithu by the Professional Reciters, Text 14. Asya Pratihatam Chakram Pritor Amanasa Chalat Vartate Bhagavan Arko Yavat Tapati Go Ganahai Asya Pratihatam Chakram Pritor Amanasa Chalat Vartate Bhagavan Arko Yavat Tapati Go Ganahai Asya Pratiyatam Chakram Vritora Manasat Chalat Vartate Bhagavan Arko Yava Tapati Goganahai Asya Pratiyatam Chakram Vritora Manasat Chalat Vartate Bhagavan Arko Yavat Tapati Go Ganahai Patiyatam chakram Pritoramasachalat Emanato Kunai Yapatitam chakram Ramanasachalat Te Bhagavan Arko Huganai Patiyatam Chakram Pichora Manasachalat Hurtam Shanti Huganai Yapatiyatam chakram Manasachalat Devagavan Marcho Vatapati Goganai Vaishnavis Yapatiyatam chakram Manasachalat Te Bhagavan Arto Asya of this king Apratihitam not being impeded Chakram the circle of influence. Prito of King Prithu. Amanasa Achalat. Up to Manasa Mountain. Vartate remains. Bhagavan, the most powerful. Arkaha, the sun god. Yavat, just as. Tapati shines. Go Ganahai with rays of light. translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Please repeat. Just as the sun god expands His shining rays up to the Arctic region without impediment, the influence of King Prithu will cover all tracts of land up to the Arctic region and will remain undisturbed as long as he lives. Purport. Although the Arctic region is not visible to ordinary persons, the sun shines there without impediment. Just as no one can check the sunshine from spreading all over the universe, no one could check the influence and reign of King Prithu, which would remain undisturbed as long as he lived. The conclusion is that the sunshine and the sun god cannot be separated, nor could King Prithu and his ruling strength be separated. His rule over everyone would continue without disturbance. Thus, the king could not be separated from his ruling power. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, although the Arctic region is not visible to ordinary persons, the sun shines there without impediment. So I must not be an ordinary person because I have seen the Arctic regions. You know, before I was a devotee, I was in the United States Navy, and the Navy stationed me, well, put me in a weather station in Iceland, which touches the Arctic Circle. And it is true that in the summertime there, the sun shines without impediment. It never gets dark at all. Kind of makes it difficult to chant your Gayatri. But, you know, sun doesn't set. It doesn't rise certain times of the year. Of course, you know, the flip side of it is that during the winter, you never see the sun, you know, in the dead of winter. it just barely gets a little bit gray in the sky, and then darkness again. Blink your eyes, you can miss the whole day. So the Arctic region is there, and at certain times, you know, the sun shines without impediment. Of course, here in the more temperate regions, you know, we see that, you know, the amount of sunlight, you know, increases and decreases. You know, days are longer in the winter, shorter in the summer. A few years ago, devotees invited me to go to Bali in Indonesia, which is very close to the equator. So there it's actually very nice because every day the sun rises at 6, it sets at 6. Every single day. Easy to get regulated there. most important point in this purport is that the king could not be separated from his ruling power. And Prabhupada gives the example that the sunshine and the sun god cannot be separated. That's the natural condition. So the king had some power, you know, some ruling power, and that was part of his identity, and he wasn't separated from it. of course, each of us has certain potencies. We're not impotents. Krishna explains Mamai Vamso Jivaloke Jivabhuta Sanatana. Krishna says, as spirit souls, we are part and parcel of Him. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha. So Krishna has a form of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So we also have a form of eternality, knowledge, and bliss, which means we have an existence potency. You know, we have a knowledge potency, and we have a pleasure potency. We have those things just as Krishna does. Because like we're little samples of Krishna. The difference is that Krishna is Swarat. He's completely independent. And he's the supreme controller. We may have some little ability to control things. We have some minute independence. But we're not completely independent as Krishna is. And we're not unlimited in potency. We have minute potencies as spirit souls. Now, in our original condition, you know, Jivaras Rupahoy, Krishnara Nitya Das, we have a spiritual body, a Swarupa, a spiritual form of a particular kind. And in that spiritual form, we serve Krishna in a certain capacity. But now we find ourselves in the material world, and that original spiritual form is covered. And we now identify, you know, with a temporary material body. Of course, the influence of the soul is still there. You know, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Dehinosmi Nyata Dehe, Karmaram Yovanam Jara, Tata Dehantara Prapti, Dearest Atra Namuyate. We can tell there's something more than the body because we observe each of us in the course of our lives that the body is constantly changing, but there's something else there, consciousness, which is the symptom of the soul. It's one of the symptoms of the soul. And without, you know, the presence of the soul, without the potency of the soul within the body doesn't work. It doesn't move. It can't function. So we have spiritual potency. Each of us, as spirit souls, we have some spiritual potency, and it's that spiritual potency that allows the body to function. You know, when that spiritual atom, you know, the soul, isn't present in the body, then the body ceases to function, it decays. So, the body is like it's a vehicle for the soul. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridesh Arjuna Tishtite Brahmyan Sarva Bhutanam Yantrarudani Mayaya. Yeah, the body's like a vehicle for the soul. Of course, the soul is not completely independent. As I said, the soul is not Swarat, as Krishna is. Krishna is there also in the heart, along with the individual soul. And, you know, Krishna is, you know, controlling the body, you know, according to our karma. We get a certain type of body. I mean, the body may display apparently certain potencies. Like you see a body and it's jumping, it's moving, it's doing this, it's doing that. But that is not because of any inherent potency that the body itself has. It's only operating like that because of the presence of the soul and the super soul, within the body. So the soul has many qualities. Like there are lists in the Nectar Devotion of the different qualities of Krishna. And some of the qualities we also possess. It's explained a certain percentage of those qualities the individual jiva souls also possess. So Krishna is known as Bhagavan, one who possesses opulences. Aishvarasya samagrasya viryasya yasasa shriya jnanavayaragyos chaiva sanam bhagamitingana. So there are six principal opulences that Krishna possesses in full. And these are Aishvarya, means wealth. Aishvaryasya yashasha, fame, virya, strength, jnana, knowledge, vairagya, renunciation, and shriya, beauty. These are the six principal opulences. But these are actually characteristics of the soul. Krishna has, wealth, all knowledge, all beauty, all strength, all renunciation. He has all of these opulences in full. But because we are part and parcel of Krishna as spirit souls, we have some tiny quantity of these same opulences. And in our natural state, these opulences are displayed in a spiritual form, the swarupa. But in our present condition state, when we're identifying with a gross material body, these things are manifested, through, they're reflected in, the gross machinery of the body. But the qualities really aren't bodily. Like you say, okay, there's somebody beautiful or handsome, but if they die, nobody thinks that the body itself is really beautiful or really handsome. When the soul is the soul, which really possesses the qualities, when it's gone, you don't think that what's left really is. So it's only when the soul is present that you think, oh, he or she is so intelligent or so renounced or so beautiful or handsome or whatever. So in the conditioned state, these opulences are reflected in the medium of the body consciousness, the symptom of the soul, and the various opulences that the soul may possess are kind of pervertedly reflected in the gross physical body. and in that condition, you can be separated, from your opulence. just like it's being described in this verse, that one of the benedictions that Prithu has, of course he's a avatar. He's a manifestation of Krishna himself. But he couldn't be separated from his ruling power. Like we may have some king or president in this world, but we see that they are sometimes separated from the ruling power. Like there's, Prime Minister of Thailand. Recently there was a coup, military coup in the country. So he was at the United Nations, as the Prime Minister of his country, And he just gets a phone call saying, hey, you're out. It's kind of an embarrassing situation. You know, separated from his ruling power. So we often see that. You know, somebody may be displaying some kind of opulence like wealth, but then suddenly they're separated from their opulence. Or, you know, they may be manifesting some kind of beauty, but then they're separated from it, you know, by some disease or accident or something. So that's the nature of the conditioned state, you know, that the natural opulences of the soul, they get reflected into the, you know, material body where they're temporary and limited. And because we try to use the material body for our own selfish purposes, we get tangled up in the miseries of material existence. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anudarshanam. An intelligent person will see, well, every material body is subject to birth, death, old age, and disease. Of course, some bodies last longer than others. You have Lord Brahma. His body lasts for 311 trillion years, you know, before he has to give it up. And then there's some living entities, they exist for a kalpa, a day of Brahma, you know, 4 billion years. And then some living entities, they get to keep their body for a whole manvantara period, about 300 million years. And then others, like us, you know, on this terrestrial level, we get to keep, you know, our body with whatever tiny little bit of reflected opulence it displays for very few years. Like in this Kali Yuga, you know, if we're very, very lucky, we might live to 100 years, but probably less. But the big thing to keep in mind, however, is that we're not these bodies. There's the soul. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives, you know, like a basic description. He says, well, there's the stula sharira. That means the gross physical body, made of earth, air, fire, water, etc. Then beyond that, there is what's called the linga sharira, or sometimes sukshma sharira, the subtle body, made of mind, intelligence, and false ego. And then beyond that, there's the nitya sharira, the eternal form, eternal body, you know, the swarupa, the spirit soul in its original form. But now that's covered. So when we give up one gross physical body, we get another based on the condition of our sukshma sharira, our subtle body, linga sharira. You know, according to our mental state, you know, we'll get a certain type of body, and that, you know, body will reflect in it certain opulences according to the karma, according to how we've lived our past life. We'll get a certain type of body, a human body, a plant body, an animal body, something like that, or a demigod body. And say if we got a human body, well, it'll be either a male body or a female body. It'll have certain qualities and characteristics and talents and abilities as a result of our past pious and impious activities. But what is it? It's a machine for us to use. It's an instrument for us to use. The mistake is to identify it as the real self and not realize it's an instrument, it's an opportunity, it's something for us to use, a vehicle. It's a vehicle that will take us somewhere. So for us to properly understand that, we have to understand where we want to go. So where do we want to go? Well, we want to take part in Krishna's Nitya Lila. We want to enter, you know, into the eternal pastimes of Lord Krishna, Lord Chaitanya. So how to do that? Well, we have to learn to use the body that we have with all of its, you know, abilities and talents and characteristics, whatever they may happen to be, in Krishna's service. Then if we do that, then gradually, our acharyas explain, we will eventually come to the point of understanding, you know, what our swarupa is, our original spiritual form, and our original, you know, our role in Krishna's eternal pastimes, and Lord Chaitanya's eternal pastimes. And then those kind of opulences that we display in that, because in that state, you know, the soul has certain opulences and it uses them in Krishna's service for Krishna's pleasure. It's not that in the spiritual world the souls have no opulences. They do. But everything is used for Krishna's satisfaction, for Krishna's pleasure. Not the, you know, in, if there's some selfish desire to use whatever opulences and abilities and talents that one has, then if we try to use those things for our own satisfaction and pleasure, then, you know, we find ourselves in our current condition. So we want to move in the other direction, not towards more and more entanglement in our own anitya lila in the material world, but we want to become part of, you know, Krishna's eternal pastimes, which means taking a subordinate position as servants. And if we do that, then our natural abilities and potencies and opulences and talents will be, you know, displayed, and we experience a life of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. And if we go the other way, then we find ourselves remaining entangled in samsara. And whatever, you know, opulences, talents, potencies, abilities that are manifest in a reflected way in our material body, we'll find we'll be separated from. We may have some wealth, but we'll be separated from it. We may have some beauty, or we'll be separated from it. You know, we may have some, you know, renunciation, but we'll be separated from it. You find oneself again becoming attached, you know, to material things. If you have some knowledge, you'll be separated from it. You know, people, sometimes you have very, very intelligent people, you know, towards, you know, in the, you know, they become deranged in some way, or suffer Alzheimer's disease or something, whatever knowledge, or they'll become separated from it. So if we want to have, you know, our real, you know, opulences and not be separated from them, we have to surrender to Krishna. Sarva dharman prityaja mamekam sharanam vraja, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Just surrender unto me. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Svavas.
Thank you for a nice class. In listening to your class, it just made me kind of think a little bit about how and what a devotee should do to understand, you know, what their position is, you know, in the sense of executing of Krishna consciousness. How do you kind of understand where you are in Krishna consciousness, what you should be doing? And like it almost is simplistic in the sense of, like, let's say Arjuna, you know, he was a kshatriya, he was a warrior, he was, you know, that was his training from the very beginning. So what does a devotee do, or what should a devotee do to realize what they need to be doing in Krishna consciousness? You're mentioning so many different attributes of the soul and different things. And here we're reading about Prita Maharaj, what his position is. So what does a devotee do to figure out what they should be doing? Like, do we make it a career to wash pots for the rest of our life? Or do we make it a career to, you know, be a cook? Like that.
Well, the first thing to understand is we're not swarats. You know, we're not completely independent. There is always some authority. I mean, even in the spiritual world, say if somebody gets transferred there, say if somebody does become very advanced in this lifetime, like Rupa Goswami says, the next stage is you'll be transferred to the universe where Krishna's Leela are actually going on within the material universes, and then you'll be trained there. And then even in the spiritual world, you know, if you look at the description, there are different groups of cowherd boys, different groups of gopis, different groups of cows. All the different groups have their leaders. And, you know, so you're never going to get away from the fact that you're going to be under somebody's direction. You know, like Srila Prabhupada once said, there's going to be ISKCON in the spiritual world. So some people think, oh no, and others say, say fine, great. Because really, we're never going to be completely, totally independent to do, you know, whatever we want to do. Say if you do become a gopi in the spiritual world, you're going to find there's some, you know, head gopi in your organization is going to be giving you instruction how to serve Krishna. So what to speak of, you know, in this world, there's going to be authority. I mean, Rupa Goswami kind of lays out like the whole process. He says, Adau Gurvashraya. You know, the first thing is you have to surrender unto the guru. I mean, that's, now, what do we mean by guru? It has, I mean, the usual understanding is, you know, the Diksha Guru, initiating spiritual master. But there are all kinds of gurus, authorities, Shiksha Gurus, instructing gurus, Vartma Padarshika Gurus, and, you know, Diksha Guru. And they're all equal manifestations of, you know, Krishna. So when Srila Prabhupada established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, he was kind of establishing a replica spiritual society. Kind of, you know, because, as I said, even in the spiritual world, you know, we're going to have authorities. So, you know, we're going to have to get used to it here. That's part of the training for spiritual life. Now, we have, according to Rupa Goswami and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, we have constitutional duties and then we have our other kinds of duties. So our constitutional duty, that becomes revealed at a very advanced stage in Krishna consciousness. You know, Adau Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha. You know, first comes a little bit of faith in Krishna consciousness, then one associates with the devotees, Ata Bhajana Kriya, then one starts to practice, you know, devotional service under the guidance of authorities, taking initiation from the spiritual master, serving in the association of devotees. And from there, if one does that, then one goes to the stage of anartana vritti, when the impurities start to go away. And then one comes to the platform of nishta, very firm faith in the process of Krishna consciousness. You just understand you're never going to leave it, never going to give it up. There's no doubt about it. This is it. And then one keeps on practicing devotional service. One comes to the stage of ruchi, a genuine taste for it, where it's no longer a matter of just doing it in the vaidhi bhakti sense, that it's something that you're ordered to do. You actually become attracted to it. And then beyond that, there are higher stages, asakti, attachment, bhava, you know, when one's constitutional emotions, spiritual emotions start becoming manifest, and finally, you know, prema. So, in our state, you know, where we haven't realized our swarupas and things like that, we serve in the association of devotees under the direction of authorities. And I would say that, you know, the process of discovering one's service, it's like a cooperative thing. It's like Krishna doesn't want robots or machines. Neither does he want competitor Krishnas. You know, he wants people who souls who are voluntarily trying to serve him with love and devotion according to their abilities in the association of other devotees. So we have to learn how to do that. So the basic thing is we have to be servants of Krishna. Now, what kind of servants of Krishna to be, you know, when we're identifying with our material bodies that we have now, the man's body or the woman's body, the old body or the young body, whatever type of body it is we have now, we have to engage it in Krishna's service in the association of devotees. And I think it's a negotiation. I mean, practically speaking, it's sort of a something that I think each devotee may have a desire to serve Krishna in a particular way, but it has to be done so that that service is accepted by, you know, the society of devotees. And this is something, you know, it's a very fundamental aspect. Tandara Charanasevi Bhakti Sannivas. You know, we serve, you know, the spiritual master in the association of devotees. So if you're serving your spiritual master but offending the society of devotees, you know, it's not or just following your own whim and displeasing the society of devotees, then it's not a very good situation. So the ideal thing is, well, we serve Krishna in the society of devotees, and if we have some desire to serve Krishna in some particular way, then we can express that, you know, desire. And if the society of devotees blesses us, then we can carry out that service with the blessings of the devotees. I mean, I'm giving general principles, you know, like my 30 years of realization, but...
Okay, well, thank you. That's a very nice answer. So basically, you're saying that, you know, you spoke about this principle of authority, because that's what we're reading about here in Prithu Maharaj. Mm-hmm. His authority was so powerful that no one could go against him. And he's actually being exemplified by the sun. I mean, the sun is so powerful, so is King Prithu.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you speak of this principle of authority, of course, Prabhupada spoke about that a lot also, in a lot of lectures and, you know, just in his books even written. So does that mean that if there's an authority in Krishna consciousness, you know, it can be a temple president, it can be a temple commander, it can be a head pujari, GBC. So if that particular authority has some kind of decision-making power, if they think that this individual is not doing the service properly or doesn't fit in that particular position, maybe he was there or she was there for a while, if you feel that they don't fit there anymore, should that authority make a decision and say, well, no, you shouldn't do this anymore. You need to do something else, or you need to find some other kind of situation that fits your particular service, maybe here, it's not what we're doing. I'm asking this on the principle that a lot of times when I speak to a lot of temple presidents around the movement, they find that at a certain point, devotees tend to take that swarat position. they tend to take an independent position, thinking that they deserve or that they should be given a certain amount of independence. And they feel that they should do what they want to do for Prabhupada, for their guru, for ISKCON. So where does this line draw? You know, like, where is it that the authority at a particular point feels that they can make these kind of decisions and execute them in order to, let's say, fulfill their particular idea of what the temple should be doing? Or is it that you just have a democracy and take everybody's input and go crazy? You know, that's, you know, like a lot of temple presidents don't want to be a president anymore because they find themselves involved or surrounded by a lot of Swarat devotees, you know, that are independent, and they push their will as to what they're going to do and what they're not going to do. So I'm trying to figure out, where is this line of authority? You know, like, okay, like, even in the material world, you have like a boss. And, you know, if you're a boss, that means that you have the power to hire and to fire. And why would someone get fired? Or why would someone get hired? And what's the motivation for someone to surrender to a boss or not surrender to a boss? Like, you know, in the material world, it could be, okay, it's a paycheck. I have a family to support. I'll take from this crazy boss. I'll take whatever I have to do because I need the paycheck. Or some people say, well, I'm not going to take this kind of stuff. You know, so I'm trying to figure out, you know, if you can, where does this authority, where is it in Krishna consciousness? How do we get people to become understanding of this?
Well, there's, as I was saying, there's a, Krishna doesn't want robots, you know, that, you know, kind of like marching machines, ultimately. I mean, Krishna could do that. I mean, he could arrange it so all of us, everybody is in this world is walking around with tilak and dhotis and saris on. I mean, he can control things like that if he wanted to. He could force everybody to do anything he wanted. But what he wants is voluntary, loving, devotional service. That's sort of like the ultimate goal. So I think in our society, something like that has to be there, too. It's not like, on the one hand, it's not that everybody can be Swarat, independent competitor Krishnas. Neither, on the other hand, is everybody going to be a robot, you know, or a machine, which means, you know, there's got to be some kind of medium there. And how that works out in any particular case, you know, I really can't say. I mean, I know what I've done in my, you know, personal life and in devotional service, you know, to deal with those things. I've, you know, found that I think, you know, authorities have to be sensitive to, you know, the individual devotee and what they want to do. And the individual devotees have to be sensitive to the fact that they're living in a society of devotees. And if they want to do something, it's got to have the approval, you know, of, you know, the society of devotees. Not because of some just authoritarian principle, but because that's the way it is in the spiritual world. So, how to do that? You know, Tesham Sadada Yuktanam Bhajatam Pratipurvikam Didami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mamubhyantite. If somebody's a really sincere devotee and in a position of authority, they'll figure out, Krishna will give them the intelligence how to make everything function in the best possible way for Krishna, and also so that devotees feel like a little bit inspired to be, you know, doing the service that they're doing, and they're feeling that by doing this, I'm making spiritual advancement in Krishna consciousness. Not that just like, you know, it's like a job that has to be done, and you don't understand the reason for it or what the purpose is. And then yeah, so it's I mean, it's a very important thing to figure out. And as I said, I think there are two ways to go wrong. Yes.
Garden sidewalk.
Well, you can speak to Swavas Prabhu about that after. Okay, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. I think we're a little bit over time. Sorry, we have to stop now.